The Buddha taught that appropriate attention is the most important internal quality you can develop on the path to get you to have your first taste of the deathless. Now notice that's appropriate attention, it's not bare attention. The Buddha never taught bare attention. For him, there are only two kinds, appropriate and inappropriate. It has to do with the questions you ask. For appropriate attention, you avoid questions such as, who am I, what am I, do I exist, do I not exist? You focus instead on questions having to do with, where is the suffering right now? Where is the stress? Where is the cause of that stress right now? In other words, you look for these things as you experience them directly. Where is the path? Well, the path is not something you just scrounge around and find. It's something you actually have to construct. And then you have a direct experience of the cessation of suffering. That's appropriate attention. You're looking to see these things inside you. If they're not already there, you give rise to them in terms of the path. As for the cause of suffering, that's already there. You can get rid of it. These truths have duties. Stress and suffering is to be comprehended. In other words, you understand it to the point of dispassion. No passion, no aversion, no delusion around it. And the Buddha defines that as the as clinging to the aggregates. The clinging there is desire and passion. Then the cause of the suffering is craving, which is also desire and passion. So what's the difference? Well, the word for craving is thirst. The word for clinging is feeding. So you see the connection. We're looking for something to feed on. That's what's going to cause you to suffer. When you actually land on something you're feeding on, even though you may be getting some enjoyment out of the food, it's a very unstable and dangerous situation. You may notice stray dogs, when they get a piece of meat or a piece of something to eat, they're constantly afraid that somebody else is going to take it away. It puts you in a position of uncertainty, instability. And even though you're feeding and getting some nourishment and beginning to assuage your hunger, there's still some hunger going on there. So that's the suffering. You look to see how your mind does that. You look to see what sensual fantasies you're attached to, what views about the world you're attached to, what ideas of habits and practices you should follow that you're attached to, what ideas of self you're attached to. We often see these forms of attachment much more clearly than we see when the Buddha says, well, these things actually come from attachment to form and feeling, perception, fabrications, consciousness. Even those activities are actually closer to the mind. We tend to attach to them in the form of views or habits and practices that we're attached to, or a sense of who we are, or a sense of where we're going to find our sensual pleasures. Those things we can clearly see. It takes the time to get into meditation. As you get the mind to settle down, you start dealing directly with form and feelings and perceptions as you try to create a state of concentration. So you're looking for these things in terms of that pattern of where's the problem? What's the cause? What's the solution? Is the solution possible? And then what is the solution? Looking at things in terms of cause and effect. And the cause there is going to be causes coming from the mind. That's why the Buddha has a special term for that, origination. You're not just looking at things arising and passing away. You're looking at things as their cause from something that's going on in the mind. But you constantly have to put aside those other questions about me, who I am, what I am, because they're not just metaphysical questions. There's an emotional aspect to them as well. Because after all, the things the Buddha is telling you that are causing you suffering and things that are suffering are things that you want, things that you hold on to, things that you have desire and passion for. As long as you define yourself around those passions, you're not going to be able to let go of them. You're not going to be able to see them clearly. You have to learn how to put that sense of I and me aside. This is especially important as you're learning, because a lot of times your I is very attached to a certain amount of pride, certain amount of conceit, an unwillingness to change. And an important part of the practice is seeing I've been doing things wrong. I've got to learn new ways of doing things. To whatever extent the I is constructed around those old ways of doing things, it's going to be troublesome. So you need to have a more fluid sense of I, and see that sense of I as part of the path, something you do, rather than something you are. And you can do a new I for yourself, make a new I, by deciding that you're going to be eager to learn, willing to learn. Because if we've learned nothing else from those koan stories from the Zen and the Chan tradition, the lessons we need to learn are precisely where we're blinded by our own sense of what we think we already know, or what we think is already right. This is where it gets difficult. Because on the one hand, you do want to be willing to learn new things. But there are also times when you make sure that the lessons you're learning really are good for you. The person teaching you is trustworthy. That's why the Buddha said that the most important external quality is admirable friendship. That means, one, having admirable people as friends, people who you can trust in terms of their conviction, their virtue, their generosity, their discernment. Are they good people? And then, two, you try to emulate their qualities. Which means that before you choose a teacher, you want to make sure that this person really does have those good qualities. The Buddha says one of the tests is being around that person and being very observant. And if you notice, this person would tell somebody to do something that was not in that person's best interest, or would claim to know something that he or she, i.e. the teacher, doesn't know, that kind of teacher is to be avoided. If the teacher has some subtle knowledge, and you realize that it's based on honesty rather than just a desire to appear subtle or sound subtle, then you put all those qualities together. Someone who you trust will not harm you. There's someone, i.e., who has, no one has compassion. Two, someone who won't make false claims. Someone who's truthful. And someone who's discerning. Truthful, compassionate, discerning. Those are the qualities you're looking for. When you've found someone like that, okay, then you can be safer in being willing to open yourself up and being willing to learn. Willing to change your sense of I. The Buddha doesn't have you throw out a sense of I entirely at the beginning of the path. You have to be more fluid, though. And one of the best ways to define a sense of I for the purpose of the practice is the I who's willing to learn. Is willing to learn again and again and again, because the mind has many layers. You think you've dealt with lust, say, or you've dealt with anger already, and then it comes back. Well, these things don't wear just one costume, as John Lee would say. They're like actors put on plays. They just perform the same play all the time. Everybody gets bored. Nobody comes to watch them again. So they put on a new show with a new plot, new costumes. But it's the same actors. Greed again. Aversion again. Delusion again. Just dressed up in different ways. So you have to be willing to take it in stride that the lessons you thought you learned, you haven't really learned yet. Or you may have learned one side of the problem of, say, anger, but there are other sides as well. Or the side of conceit and pride. You think you've taken care of it? Well, there are other layers, deeper and deeper. You have to be willing to learn about those, learn those lessons again and again. Not get your sense of self involved. This is the self that has pride over the knowledge you've already gained, or the self is just too tired to do anything. You have to learn how to give yourself energy. The Buddha's Dhamma talks, remember, we're not just giving information, urging, rousing, encouraging. Those are the verbs that we used: inform, urge, rouse, encourage. One part information, three parts encouragement. You have to learn how to energize yourself. Remember years back, I had a friend in high school who went into ROTC. He came back after his first ROTC program and told me what I thought was a horror story. The guys had been told to run a mile. So they ran the mile, and then as they reached the finish line, the coach said, okay, another quarter mile. If it had been me, I would have collapsed. I would have been out of the program right away. But as the coach said, when you're in the battlefield, you can't determine that you have to go only so far and then you get to rest. Sometimes you think you're going to rest. Ah, there's more work to be done, more battles to be fought. And it's the same with the defilements in your mind. It's not that they have a time clock that they check in, check out. They can come up at any time on many levels of subtlety. When they come up, you have to be prepared. Find resources of strength inside. That's the kind of eye you want, always willing to learn. Even at times when you're tired, you're willing to learn. When you're feeling frustrated, you're still willing to learn. What are you learning? You're learning about cause and effect. How is it that the mind is causing itself suffering? This is the most interesting and the most important problem in life. The Buddhist wisdom was not only in understanding suffering, but also realizing that suffering was the big problem. The suffering that we impose on ourselves, seeing that it's totally unnecessary. Because once that problem is done, then everything is done. That's when you can really rest. As the Buddha said, when you get to that point, then the questions of what are you, do you exist, do you not exist, they hold no more interest anymore. It's not the case that you put those questions aside and then they get answered with your awakening. No, you put them aside as you're practicing, and then when you gain awakening, you look back at them and say, well, those are stupid questions to begin with. The important questions are understanding suffering and its cause, the possibility that it can be ended, and the fact there's a path of practice that you can follow. When you see those things directly, then you realize how important that teaching is and how wise it is. And how wise you are in taking it on. But before you get wise like that, you have to be willing to admit to your own stupidity. In fact, gaining awakening is when you realize how stupid you were all along. Which is why awakening doesn't come with pride. It's a chastening experience. But all in the best way.